Welcome to the Good Talk Podcast, where we remind you of the joy of life, the love of God, and the possibilities that lie ahead. Pete and Jordan here with episode 107.
What we can all learn from Taylor Swift.
Never thought I'd hear that title.
Jumping on the bandwagon.
Never thought I'd hear that title on our podcast.
I mean, maybe you. I'm a Swiftie. I'm not like one of the hardcore. I didn't go to like the Eras tour. I regret it deeply. I don't think I realized how like epic it was until like after, but I have grown up with her music. She's my age. So like literally.
Literally grown up with her.
And when she released the song 22, I just turned 22 because we're like a month apart in age. So I think she's a phenomenal writer. She's a genius marketer. Mm-hmm. There's so much about her. I think that she has just absolutely mastered her craft in so many ways.
Well, and I agree with all that. I'll also say that if you're not a Swiftie, is that what they call the Taylor Swift fans? If you're not a Swiftie, just so you know, ultimately what we're talking about is fear. So whether you are familiar with Taylor or not, I think that you'll find this really encouraging.
Yeah, it's not just a Taylor fan club episode here, although I could totally do one. You actually were in a Taylor Swift video.
I was.
Back in the day.
I use that in my Two Truths and a Lie often because nobody actually believes. They think that's a lie, but
yeah, it's also though like so specific and extreme, like that'd be a weird lie at the same time.
I know, it would be. Yeah, who comes up with that?
But you were actually you weren't casted. Your boys were casted.
Yeah, the boys were cast in the video. She actually, back in the day, I was blogging. I guess she was reading my blog. She saw a picture of the three boys.
And she went to your church.
Yeah, she calls. She's like, hey, I really like the boys being in this video. I'll make a long story really short. So we're like, okay, I guess. So we go up to, I think it was Vermont or Maine. I think it was Maine. They were shooting this video. And so we go up there, you know, set it all up. The boys, the whole video was flashback to her as a little girl. So they had a little girl playing Taylor. Mm-hmm. And then it also had scenes of the future of her getting married and having kids, I guess, with Travis Kelce. But he wasn't in the picture back then. And my boys played her
kids. Yeah. She thought that they were like little blonde boys. Like they looked like they could be.
So, but the scene with her as a little girl had her fake parents in it. She didn't think that the guy, the professional actor that they'd casted for this video looked like it could be her dad. And she's like, right there in front of God and everybody. She's like, Pete, would you be in the video? Please, I need you to do this. I'm like, are you kidding me? They took the shirt off that poor dude's back and literally handed it to me in front of him.
So uncomfortable.
In a dressing room trailer. I felt so. This was probably his dream.
Oh, sure it was. You crushed it. Crushed his dream.
I did crush his dream.
But oh, what a life coach you were.
She did.
Yeah, true.
I didn't. Anyway, so yeah, that's how I met her. And in that season of her life, she did attend our church and, you know.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's a cool story.
But let's talk about fear because when I think about one of the things that I think anybody needs in their life, regardless of what season they're in or regardless of what age they are, whether you're married, not married, have kids, don't have kids, whether you're in your dream job or you're in a job that you're just enduring, everybody needs courage. Mm-hmm. And I find almost on a daily basis, I need some level of courage. Sometimes it's the courage to move. Sometimes it's the courage to stay, right? Like you need all different forms of courage. And kind of as a lifelong student of human behavior, and for most of my adult life, also a student of scripture, there's so many stories throughout the Bible that require courage, like so many. But one of my favorites has always been the narrative about a guy in the Old Testament by the name of Moses. And I think I like this story for a couple different reasons, but you can really break down how fear happens in the mind of an individual because there's different levels to fear. And Moses is a guy, he's out in the wilderness, he's been there for 40 years, he's essentially on the run, he's hiding, he had killed somebody, right? So self-preservation. He's on the run.
Good reason to hide.
God shows up one day. Long story, but God shows up one day. He's like, I have an assignment for you. I want you to go confront Pharaoh, and I want you to tell the Israelites, my people, that I've sent you, and that I'm going to set them free from 400 years of slavery. And Moses hears all this, but he freaks out. And in that moment, he has a response, I think very similar to the way we respond when we're faced with a situation that feels like I don't have what it takes, or something could go wrong, right? And so I just want to look at his response and kind of break it apart, and then we're going to talk about Taylor Swift and what she did, okay? So it kind of starts, this is in the Old Testament, and God again shows up. He's got, I've got this assignment for you, Moses. Moses' first response, right? This is a dude that's walking around in the wilderness. God appears to him in a burning bush. That's not burning up, by the way. It's kind of a freaky sight, and says, I have this ultimate assignment for you. His first response out of his mouth are two words, and they are, what if? All right, he says, what if they don't believe me or listen to me, and they say, God didn't appear to you? So that's his first, like, opening line.
Just doubt, yeah.
Which is exactly what we do when we're faced with an opportunity that requires courage. Mm-hmm. We almost always go, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about worry.
Yeah.
About this idea of the what if loop. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where Moses goes. The very first thing, a moment where he needs courage, and he goes to spinning off the worst case scenarios. Mm-hmm. What if they do this? What if they say this? What if they don't believe me? What if? And I just think about my life and your life. Like, you're in a season. I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast. Did we talk about you launching something?
Yeah.
Okay. I literally
last week's episode, we talked about, I just launched a new business. So yeah.
And you immediately go into the what if loop, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what have been some of your what ifs?
What if I can't get clients? What if my work's not good enough? What if, those are probably the top two.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And we talked about how we try to flip that into what if everything works out? Mm-hmm. Because most of the time, it does.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes you need that interruption in the what if loop to say, you know, what if it all works out? Mm-hmm. What's interesting is, you know, that for Moses, when he says, what if they, it gives us an indication of what he's actually afraid of. And the they, in that when he says, what if they don't listen to me or don't believe that you sent me, he's not talking about Pharaoh there.
Yeah.
He's talking about his own people.
His peers, yeah.
His peers, the Hebrews. Like, are they going to reject me? Are they going to think I'm an idiot? Do they think that I'm making all this up? What if this? What if that, right? What's interesting that to me, and I've seen this with clients I work with, I've seen this in my own life, fear is often a mask for passion, right? What you fear is often a clue to what you've been called to. Mm. So in Moses' case, you know, who is he afraid of? The Israelites. Who does he doubt? The Israelites. But who is he supposed to help? The Israelites. Mm. The reason Moses is in the wilderness on the run is because he committed murder. The reason he committed murder was he saw an Egyptian mistreating an Israelite. Mm-hmm. He had a front row seat his whole life to watching the Israelites be unjustly treated by the Egyptians. It bothered him so much that in that moment, he was so angry, so passionate, that he accidentally kills the Egyptian, right? Mm-hmm. So all this is coming back up for him. He has the opportunity to legitimately help his people, and he's overcome with fear.
Yeah.
But really, it's a mask for what he's passionate about. Fear is often a mask for passion. Mm-hmm. You tell me what you're deeply afraid of, it will often point to some calling you have, some idea you have, something that you want to do better, or you want to help someone, or you want to help a group of people. You know, fear is most often going to arise around the things that you're called to.
That's good.
And I see that in my own life. Like, okay. I used this example recently when I was talking about fear and about how it's a mask for passion. And I don't take myself too seriously in life, but I do take the gifts that I feel like God's given me and the calling that I think God's given me, I take that very serious. Mm-hmm. And so one of the times that I feel the deepest fear in my life is right before I speak.
You've said that before, and it always blows my mind. Because if any of you have seen him right before he's speaking, it looks like he's just chilling, you know, well, you don't act that way.
I'm doing everything I can to mask it, but I am internally in a mess, right? And so most often when I'm speaking somewhere, there's some kind of backstage area that they kind of shuffle you into right before. They're going to hand you your mic. They're going to say, don't trip over that. Look at this camera, whatever.
Yeah.
I wait to the last possible second to step backstage because that's when it really grips me.
Yeah.
That's when I'm like ready to pee in my pants. Like,
you see, we're wired so differently because we spoke together in January
yeah.
at this event. And I was like, Pete, I don't want to miss like our cue. So I wouldn't get back there to backstage. And you're like, no, no, Jordan, like, we're good. We're good. Let's hang out in the lobby. I'm like, no, Pete, I'm going to go back to the back of the, you know, backstage, and then can talk to people. And you're like, Jordan, I really don't think it's a good idea. It'll just all hit you at once. And it like didn't, but it still did for you.
I think sometimes people think, wow, he is just like such a people person. He wants to be around people right until the moment he, and I do, I love people and I love the conversations I have, but sometimes if I'm honest, it's a distraction as well.
Right before.
It keeps me from thinking about what I'm about to have to do.
Yeah, I get that.
And so I'll be standing there backstage in those 2 minutes, and it's so painful, and that's when the what ifs kick in. It's like, what if my zipper's down? What if my shoes come untied? What if I get out there and I forget what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. What if, I go off script, which I do a lot, and I say something really stupid. It's not like a podcast where we could edit it out.
Yeah.
I might say something and get canceled.
Yeah.
Like,
what's so funny about like even that kind of situation, and I would think that a lot of people can apply that same kind of fear to something you've done 100 times. You speak publicly in front of thousands of people 20 plus weekends a year.
Yeah.
Like you, it's not that you don't have the skills or the practice, and you've done it for 25 decades.
Years.
So it's wild that that can still creep in, which is probably encouraging to some to feel like, okay, if he still gets scared, or if so-and-so still gets scared, you know, the president of the United States gets scared every time he stands up on, you know. So I just think it's like a little bit humanizing to feel like, okay, everybody's there. We've all been there.
I know I am for
regardless
sure.
Regardless of how good you are.
But something I think almost miraculous happens every single time, and that's this. When I push through those what ifs, the moment that curtain opens and I have to step out there, from the moment I get to wherever it is I'm speaking, I'm standing in that spot and the lights come on or whatever, the introduction, and I'm there and it's me, in that moment, every bit of that fear just dissipates instantly. Mm-hmm. But I have to move through all the what ifs and get to what is. Mm-hmm. And when I get to what is, it all disappears.
That's good.
And so what I'm constantly trying to remind people, and I want everyone to make sure they hear this, is that the present moment, no matter how difficult, no matter how painful, no matter how scary, it's never unbearable. Mm-hmm. What is unbearable is what you think might happen in 2 minutes or in 2 hours or in 2 weeks or 2 years.
Yeah.
All of your fear lives in the future. Mm-hmm. It doesn't live in this present moment. So as soon as I get from predicting what could happen in the future with all my what ifs and I step into what is, everything changes. Mm. Now, what's so interesting about the story with Moses, and I never noticed this until just literally in the past couple weeks, but Moses responds, his first response is, what if they don't believe me? The very next sentence of what God says back to Moses, he says, Moses, what is in your hand? What is in your hand? He literally shifts Moses from what if to what is. Mm-hmm. He's like, get out all your future things, spinning off all these worst case scenarios about what might happen. What is in your hand right now?
Right.
And I could take that story for a long time because there's a lot of cool things that end up happening with what is in Moses' hand. But that distinction that I think God often is trying to like move us from what if to what is. Get back in that present moment, because in that present moment, it's not unbearable.
It's true. It's like, if you think about anxiety, or I have friends that are anxious, like they just kind of naturally are like lend themselves to anxiety. Anxiety is so, it's future focused. You can, I don't think, and maybe some psychologists can correct us, but I don't think you can have anxiety in the present if you're not thinking about the future.
Right.
Like your present moment is not anxious because it's known.
Yep.
The anxiety comes from the unknown, and that is all future, which again, this just goes back to the what ifs to the what is. That's really, really cool.
Yep. From what if to what is. I think that's so key. Now, the thing that keeps us from shifting from what if to what is, in my opinion, is people see, like, again, we could use Moses as an example. He sees his past as a limitation. He doesn't think he's going to go on to use all these excuses that he's not a good communicator. He doesn't have the gift set to pull off what it is that God's calling him to do. He's picturing his past, his present limitations, his worst case scenarios of the future. He's picturing all of that like this big boulder. Mm-hmm. That's standing in his path. And I think a lot of people listening to this right now, they're on some kind of path. They have some goals that are up ahead, but they visualize almost like this big boulder that's standing in front of them that's keeping them from getting what it is they want. And that boulder represents a lot of things. Again, it could be your past. It could be your giftedness. It could be you don't think you have enough resources. You don't have the gift set. You don't have enough connections. You don't have enough money. Whatever it is, it's this boulder that's standing in front of you that's you know, keeping you from getting what it is you want. And there's a great quote. I love this quote. There have been books written about this quote. It's from a Roman emperor. His name was Marcus Aurelius. And he said this, "What stands in the way becomes the way." Mm-hmm. I love that quote. Like, oh, I wish I would have come up with that.
Yeah.
What stands in the way becomes the way.
Yes.
So then the question is, what if the obstacle was the way? Right. Again, for me, when I'm backstage and I'm stuck in my what ifs, it's like a big boulder. I mean, there are times I just want to run away. Like, surely to God, somebody else can go out there and do this. Like, I don't want to do this. I'd rather be anywhere in the world but in this moment. And I know that's all tricks in my mind. I know that, but it feels so real in that moment. And I have to literally push through that boulder of my what ifs, push through that fear, push through that uncomfortability of not wanting to be there in that moment. I have to push through that to get from what if to what is. So the idea is, you know, what if what stands in the way actually becomes the way?
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us to Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift, yeah.
So just, again, years ago, I got the opportunity to meet her. I think she's a cool girl. I think she's crazy generous. She was very generous in the time that I knew her when she was at church. I am by no way saying that I am her pastor or that I am responsible for her views politically, socially, whatever, right? Yeah. She has kind of her own life and she's doing her own thing. But whether or not I agree with everything she says or does, doesn't matter. Yeah. There's some things that I think we can learn from everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's always been a motto of mine.
100%.
I don't care who they are, what they believe. There's probably something there I can learn from them.
Yeah, I agree.
And for her, when I look at her life and her career, I go back to 2019. In 2019, Taylor was not in a great place. Her entire music catalog was purchased from her publisher by entertainment tycoon Scooter Braun. Everybody's heard this story. Mm-hmm. You probably remember all that going down. She's not happy, to say the least.
Yeah.
Right? Publicly, she stated, "This is my worst case scenario." Yeah. In other words, like, this is everything that every nightmare I've ever had is coming true in this moment. All of my work, all of my art has been bought. Mm-hmm. It is not mine.
Right.
And that messed with her in a big way. Mm-hmm. She's devastated. She feels taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. She feels helpless.
Lied to, yeah.
And despite her own advice, she can't shake it off. Did you get
nice.
That?
Nice. Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah. Honestly, you should have employed me for this part. I could have given you so many plus one-liners.
That's the only song I know. But then what happens, again, big boulder, right, in her path, a huge boulder, her worst case scenario boulder. Then there's a tweet from
Kelly Clarkson.
And I don't have the tweet in front of me. I've seen the tweet many times. But essentially she says, "Hey, Taylor, why don't you go back in, re-record all this music, put your own little twist on it.
Add some bonuses so people want to buy
it." Yeah, add some bonuses. And she's like, "I would buy that in a heartbeat." So that tweet, maybe one of the most powerful tweets to ever go out, goes out into the world. I don't know how all this went down, but basically Taylor's like, "Good idea. I think I'll do that." So, of course, she goes back in, she re-records her first few albums, and basically has been putting out new music ever since that day.
Re-recording the same songs, getting more more hits than ever, like, and creating an army while she's doing
it. Yeah, because who can put out that much new music that often? And I know it wasn't new, but it was new because, as she said, this is my version.
Yeah, it's,
and people wanted her version.
Yeah, of course, because again, if you are a Swiftie or you're not, even if you're not like one of the diehards, I'm literally staring at a record that she put out, like one of the like old timey records, but the new one.
Yeah.
And it says Taylor's version on it. I have a 1989 one just sitting there with Taylor's version on it. Have I listened to it? No, but I bought it. Actually, it was a gift. But like, yeah, I mean, she has created this army of people who are like ride or die supporters through that, because they saw her overcoming and they got on her side. It's just
mind-blowing. So, I mean, of course, she's very popular. very well liked before all that happens. But this whole event of going back in, re-recording all this music, the act of constantly releasing this music for basically the past 5 years transforms her career, elevates her to a level of pop stardom that I don't know if anyone has ever reached before.
No.
The whole Eras tour, which would have never happened, by the way, without her going back and re-recording this music. Now, 146 dates that were, you know, announced across 5 continents, $2.2 billion in ticket sales in North America alone, projected to generate close to $5 billion in consumer spending in the U.S. alone. Right now, she's overseas, racking it in. Mm-hmm. $5 billion.
Yep.
She has not only become bigger and more popular as a result of re-recording all this music, but in the process, she seizes control of something she didn't have control of before, which was her own music. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great example of taking something that would have never been chosen, right? She would never have chose this, that what happened to her back in 2019. She thought it was profoundly unfair and screwed up, but something that brought a tremendous amount of fear for her because, again, she's suddenly out of control of the thing that mattered the most to her, her work, her art, and taking that massive obstacle that looks like it's blocking her path, blocking the way she wanted to go. And instead of becoming just a victim of it and becoming like just overcome with fear, she uses it to catapult her to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. That 1989 album that you just referred to has now become the most streamed album of all time.
Wild.
She's Times Person of the Year this year. First artist, by the way, to ever be awarded the title of Times Person of the Year.
Wild.
In February, she made history at the Grammy Awards, the first artist to win Album of the Year 4 times, right? I mean, it comes down to this, and I think this we all have to answer this question, right? What do you do after the thing that incites the fear in your life, right? What we do after that thing that has happened that incites that fear in us matters more than you could ever imagine. Because she had 2 choices. She spent a little bit of time as a mm-hmm. victim. She did, and she came across that way in the media. And to be honest, it did not play well mm-hmm. when she played that role. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, she takes control, and she's like, I'm not going to be a victim. There actually is something I can do about this. I can push through this obstacle. What if the obstacle is the way? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just a way. It was a massive way for her.
Yeah.
But she had to push through that. Mm-hmm. And it's easy. It's easy when you look at these characters in the Bible. It's easy when you look at someone like Taylor, who's now on the other side of that obstacle, to be like, yeah, well, of course, that made sense for them. No, it didn't necessarily make sense. Nobody had ever done that.
Yeah, in her brain, she could think, her what ifs were, what if no one wants to buy it because it's the exact same? Yeah, maybe there are a couple more songs, like who's going to support me versus Scooter Braun, who's this powerhouse? Are the radio stations going to listen to me or Scooter Braun? Like, there's so many things that she probably had to battle with that.
Yeah. I just think this, and this is for all of us. It takes a tremendous amount of courage, but what if you looked at what's standing in your way as the way? Because unless we are exposed to difficulty and stresses and adversity and situations that we did not want, we can't fully become what we're capable of becoming.
Yeah,
we actually need those things mm-hmm. To push us, to sharpen us, to, again, help us become who we're capable of becoming. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to make an impact, big or small, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah. I feel like anytime you're talking to a client and you coach a lot of, like, you know, business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, I think from all of them that I can even remember, there was always a moment like that happened in their life, and they attribute a lot of the success to that moment, which would probably have been considered a low in their life. But it's like that scarcity or that pain point made them get creative, get out of their comfort zone and push past it. And that's, you know, essentially the catalyst. So it's almost like, I've told you this before, and it doesn't feel like this when you're in the moment, but it's almost like when something like that is presented, it's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a little bit in me that's kind of like, you know, you and I had a moment in January where we were just like kind of battling through some work stuff, and like, It almost though, like, was a little exciting because I'm like, something's gonna happen
after we got done licking
after
our wounds.
We got done like being sad. No, it's but it in the back of my mind, I still kind of knew. I'm like, we're gonna figure this out, mm-hmm. and something's going to change, and yep. I like that change. Yep. So I don't know. It's kind of, if you can kind of shift your mentality to look at that as an opportunity.
Yeah,
it's kind of, you know, it will be a guiding factor. Yep. You know,
there, shift's a great word, because in my mind, again, there's two great shifts that have to happen whenever you step into a moment that requires courage. You have to make that shift from what if to what is. Mm-hmm. Get in your present moment. And when you do that, it doesn't mean that all the problems go away.
Right.
Right. For Taylor, for example, she had her season of the worst case scenarios and feeling like a victim, but she came out of that into what is. Now, when she came into what is, it didn't mean there still weren't challenges. Oh, there were, but now she can see the challenges for what they are. Mm-hmm. That not something blocking her way, they actually are the way.
Yeah.
And so then that's when that second shift comes, right? You go from what if to what is, and then once you get to what is, you can see a little more clearly, and then you can start to put a plan together that says, my limitations, my past, my difficulties, my challenges are not blocking my way. Mm-hmm. They are the way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to embrace them and I'm going to walk straight ahead. Mm-hmm. She did that. Countless others have done that. And you just got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing comfortable about that.
Yeah. It's good. It's really good. Thank you. Thank you for using Taylor.
You're welcome. It's the only, I've noticed the past few podcasts, you've been kind of nodding off and looking off like you're very uninterested. I'm like, I got to find a way to get her back into this.
Just make everything about Taylor or some kind of music. That's funny. All right, guys. Well, that was, thank you. That was honestly, I need that kind of reminder. And I hope you guys found that helpful. And we will be back next week with another episode of the Good Talk Podcast. But until then, have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful weekend. Hopefully where you are, it's getting sunny and warm and beautiful. Mm-hmm. We're getting a little bit of hint of that. And it's just breathing life into me right now.
Come on, spring.
Come on, spring. All right. Well, that was another
Good Talk.